Tune in to South Dakota Public Broadcasting Television on Thursday nights at 7 Central, 6 Mountain for On Call with the Prairie Doc. Tonight you can tune in for some SDPB special programming, but the Prairie Doc is here with us now on the phone. Dr. Holm, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing good. I'm just was at the new studio in at the journalism department. I drove home to take it here. I could have taken it there. So next week, I think I'll stay there. I do a video thing there. So I'm going to be with you on a better microphone next time.
Oh, exciting! Well, the season begins, and are you taping shows now? Give us a sort of a, for folks who don't know what On Call with the Prairie Doc is on television, give us an overview of what the show is.
Well, we do 35 shows a year, and so something like 6 or 8 of them are recorded, and the rest are live. And then the summer comes, and we do reruns. So. The majority of it is really live programming, and tonight it's going to be a tape show. We have students, and there are camera people, and they learn journalism by practicing, you know, on us. And so that's the story there. Each week we work pretty hard to put on a show that's based on honest science, you know, that's evidence-based. It's not just kind of rumor. I'm not selling a book or promoting anything. I'm trying to support the people out there with what is the very best scientific-based truths on healthcare, and it's been a great fun public service. You know, some people go to missionary work, and some people do all sorts of other things, and this has been my mission for the last. This is the 17th year.
Right. And then it ties into this larger organization that you have with newsletters and information as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I do an Andy Rooney piece at the end of each TV show. You know, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, 7 o'clock every Thursday night. And I do, and it's a 400-word essay that I write carefully. And then when we're done with the show, we send it out to the newspapers throughout the state, and I'd love to have it in the Argus. They haven't picked it up. They're pretty picky, but we're in 57 community newspapers throughout the state that show our essay every week, and it's been fun. And the writing about it is always interesting. I wrote an essay. This week, actually, on end-of-life care. We're going to do a show next week with Maggie Callanan, who wrote the book Final Gifts, and she's a fabulous speaker, and she's coming from Connecticut to be on our show.
Wow.
And my essay was about dying and facing death and the fear of dying, and I can say that with some credibility because I've got pancreas cancer, and it has recently spread to the liver, and it has nicely responded to chemotherapy, and so there's this hope that we can absolutely kill it and resect the one lesion on PET scan that shows that it spread to the liver, that we can get rid of it, and I have a chance. On the other hand, when you've got pancreas cancer, usually you don't live a long time. So I've been thinking about death, and that was the essay that I've written, and we'll be in the newspapers next week, I think. Mm. So that's been a fun thing. Newspapers, we do a one-minute interview with the doctors that volunteer to be on our show, and those one-minute shows are on the AM radios throughout the radio stations throughout the state. And then you and I do a 15-minute thing on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. And then I have an AM a half-hour show that really I've been doing 25 years. That's really what triggered this whole process of doing public health information.
All right.
And
well,
so it's been a fun thing, you know. I've found that I'm certainly an amateur radio TV person. I'm a professional doctor, but it's been fun doing the. It's been a fun thing, you know, to interview, be interviewed.
Yeah. And a great service to listeners and viewers and readers throughout the state, focusing on that science and then really giving people an opportunity to send in their questions on the television broadcast and really have folks answer them you know, live on TV. So you get a lot of questions sent and a lot of engagement.
Yeah, we have tons of questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we cut them off, we get about 20 because you can't do a whole lot more than 20. And we actually do an after-hour show to get every question that comes in answered. So we don't want to leave anybody hanging.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Laura, you did something about Obamacare earlier, ACA.
Yes.
Earlier today, and I heard it was coming. I couldn't hear it because I had other things to do, and I didn't catch it. And I thought maybe you might have a question or two, if you have time,
right,
of me on that topic.
Well, absolutely. The conversation we had was largely a political one, but it became, and really how it's sort of affecting midterm elections and what people want. But one of the interesting things, I think, about where the conversation started was this notion of how rural South Dakotans have been impacted by the Affordable Care Act and how they've been impacted by some of the political decisions as, federal lawmakers decide what's going to happen next. And you've probably seen that face to face more than anybody, doctors like you are seeing that. Talk a little bit about that, if you will, just, before Affordable Care Act, during it, and then now as things continue to change, how are patients responding to what ACA or Obamacare has brought to healthcare in the state?
I'll never forget the man who had an inherited polycystic kidney disease with progressive renal failure. And he had been employed by a place that didn't have insurance as a part of its, because his payment was so poor because it was a poor paying job and he didn't have insurance through it, and he couldn't get insurance. People wouldn't insure him until Obamacare. And I have several of those people who actually had access to health care insurance prior that didn't have it before because Obamacare came along. Now that's the good picture of it. And I'm saying Obamacare because we know it. ACA, the Affordable Care and Act, we call it that, the ACA, which it is. But there's two components, really. The biggest component was to make sure that everybody had access. And now we've got from 80% to 90% in South Dakota have access. I mean, there's still people who are foreign-born people who don't have access to health care, and there's still other people who don't have access. Medicaid covers mainly women and children and not men, unless you're totally disabled. The health care that we have in America is not adequate, I think, and it was an attempt to improve access, and it did improve access. It did not reduce costs as much as we had hoped. Those are the two things that it was attempting to do, is to reduce costs, and that's why they called it the Affordable Care Act.
Mm.
But it primarily provided access. It got a C-plus on cost. It got a B-plus on access. And what we need is revision of it. And everybody agrees with that. And the doctors agree with that. The costs are outrageous and they're getting worse. But it's not Obamacare's fault. It is the healthcare system in the U.S. It is twice as expensive as the next 10 wealthy countries in the world. And the next 10 wealthy countries who have healthcare that's half the price of the U.S., the next 10 have 99% people covered. Mm. 99% have access. Mm. So we've got a long ways to go. It was one step in the right direction, and there was nothing but resistance from one political party. And I have to say, being a lifelong Republican, I got so angry because the effort was a beautiful effort. That we got from the Republican Party was obstruction, no improvement, no work on trying to find an alternative, no matter what Fox News says, there's been no decent, reasonable alternative that was ever offered by the Republicans. And as a lifelong Republican, I said, I've had it.
Mm.
So there's my opinion. I didn't want to mince my words there, but
right.
So I think Obamacare is a step forward. It's not a huge step forward, but it's better than it got a lot better access than we had before.
What needs to happen next as the debate continues to rage? It's more complicated than just, you know, voting a Democrat or voting a Republican. What are the things that need to be done and addressed? First
Don't
steps
get me
going
wrong,
forward.
There's really good. There's great Republicans and poor Democrats. But I think what we need to do is to find a way for them to get to talking and collaborate and find an answer to improve this thing. I think pharmaceuticals need to be completely readdressed. What do you do to improve communication between the two? Well, they're so polarized. Well, part of it is because of all of the gerrymandering. And now what happens, if you're a independent, you can't vote for a Republican in the primary. You can vote for a Democrat. If you're a Democrat, you can't vote for the Republican. If you're a Republican, you can't vote for a Democrat. What we need to do is open the primaries, and it'll allow people in the middle, instead of these polarized super liberals on the left and conservatives on the right, and bring the people who are closer together, trying to do the right thing for the humans in this body of people that count for the United States of America, to bring people to work together. And that's what they have to do to help the healthcare system. You cannot do it and politically bulldog it through. I mean, Obama tried to get it through, and the only way he could get it was bulldogging, but it didn't
consequences,
come through
yeah.
in a
mm-hmm.
way that was good enough.
Right.
I mean, just kind of one step forward is all it was.
And what I'm wondering is, you know, the costs have skyrocketed, you know, so much, as you said. How do you address the cost? It seems like we can talk about compromise and political parties working together and effective legislation, but those costs, how do they get so astronomical?
Well, the biggest reason for cost is pricing. You know, so let's say we have a third party payer that's either the government or it's Medicaid or Medicare or it's VA. Or it's your insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or whatever insurance it is that you have. And they come in and they say to the Brookings Hospital, you know what, what is your price for an appendectomy? Mm-hmm. And the Brookings Hospital says, well, the price is $250. And the insurance or the third-party payer, the government, says, no, we'll pay half of that. And so the hospital, the next time they come around, they said, what's the price of your appendectomy? Well, it's $500. Mm-hmm. And the next time it's $1,000. And next time it's $5,000. What's the price of your emergency room care? So on and so forth. So the pricing has been is so much higher. Let's look at the price of Creon. I take a pancreatic enzyme because of my surgery. They removed half my pancreas, so I need enzymes to help dissolve food, or I get terrible upset GI problems, right? Mm-hmm. So I take these enzymes. We've known for a long time that they help dissolve the food, but they used to be $30 for 250 of them, which is about a month's supply. Now it's $850.
Right.
And so the insurance company says, well, we'll cover all but $300 of it. And then they bargain. There's this bargaining middleman system. Middleman, I say man because that's what they've said traditionally, and because they're the corporate people, and they seem to control things anyway, mainly males. And the middleman comes in and takes a percentage, and then the insurance industry still has to pay X amount. I mean, it's obtuse and 14 steps before you get to the bottom.
Right.
So the government could solve a lot of problems by coming to some solutions, and there are plenty of solutions that are out there, and our political people can't seem to come together because they are so polarized. And I'll add one other thing, and because they are so influenced by lobbyists. Now, who do you think spends the most amount of money lobbying in Washington? What's the most expensive lobby that we have?
I don't think that's
it's pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah. Not hard to guess that one.
No, and four times less than that is the next most expensive lobby, huge amount of money, and that is the gun lobby, you know, the gun manufacturers. I look at the NRA, and I think they've been bought out by the gun manufacturers. But it's the same as the Heart Association. American Heart Association has been bought out by a pharmaceutical industry. I called the Heart Association one time because I really believed in them, and I worked on them when I was, teaching at Emory in Atlanta. And the Heart Association was near to my heart. And then I saw a big ad talking about promoting this particular drug. I'm not going to even get into that. Mm-hmm. And I saw that this is money promoting their drug. And I said, it's a lie. And the American Heart Association person that I got to on the line said, but think of all the good that we're going to get from that money that they're giving us. So I think we need to make some gerrymandering changes. We need to make some lobbying changes. We need to make some careful steps toward trying to separate lobbying from policy when it comes to health care, just like they've tried to do that with banking. So there's my answer for controlling costs, but it's a complicated one, and you need to have Republicans and Democrats communicating.
Right, and expressing a lot of the frustration that many, many folks were hearing, say, expressing about the cost of a pharmaceutical or sort of how the system is working right now. So thank you for giving voice to that for so many. Dr. Richard Holm, tune in for On Call with the Prairie Doc Thursday nights at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB television. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Lori. See you next time.